Thank you. We are at the fifth public hearing for AB 617. I want to thank the public for turning out tonight and obviously our committee members. I'm going to dispense with a lot of the housekeeping that we've talked to about past meetings. I think you all know Cody and Cynthia from Southwest Strategies, who made tonight possible in terms of logistics, and of course the staff people at the Air Pollution Control District. So to committee members specifically, we've got to get through a lot of the agenda tonight. As I said, we're at our fifth meeting, and it's important that we meet our deadline by July. So let me start out with our goals tonight. We need some feedback on the air monitoring plan, which I'll have a short presentation. We've got a technical assessment, and it's just an update from both the district, CARB, and the Department of Pesticide Regulation. For some of you who did not make it last month, DPR did a very good job. But it took the entire 2 hours, and of course, Jessica, her SERP program was delayed till tonight. So you've all seen the agenda, and we need to really dive right into it. But feedback on the draft reduction program outline is critical for tonight as well. So with that, any questions from committee members? And again, thank you very much for agreeing to meet at 5:30. We hope that this time is convenient for all committee members and the public. Gustavo.
Yes, I understand the sense of urgency to move forward, but I just want some clarifying kind of affirmative responses. This last week when I was in Sacramento for the AB 617 consultative group meeting, I found out that the boundaries that we had originally presented to us are the original boundaries that are currently ongoing right now, and the 7 mile radius that was presented is only a zone of influence. If today we're going to jump into community air monitoring and doing an exercise in that, we have to understand first, be very clear what the boundaries are. Like, we need an affirmation of what the boundaries are, and then two, the emissions inventory list that is associated with that. I think if we move forward prematurely with talking about a community air monitoring plan without understanding the boundaries and the emissions inventory, then I think we're rushing too much, and we're really missing the really meaningful participation of what this committee was built for.
Okay, duly noted. Jamie, if you want to just on the boundaries and
The specifics are of the boundaries are in the charter. So if you read the charter, there's some specific language in there. But it is our intent that there will be monitoring within that sphere of influence. And the emissions inventory, if I'm not mistaken, that is online, already includes that 7 mile radius.
So I understand the intent of it, but like the emissions inventory list that was chosen was a secondary list, that one that includes a 7 mile radius. That is confirmed that that's the list that we're moving with forward?
Correct.
Okay, so it is, so the emissions inventory list that we're moving forward with includes a 7 mile radius, and all the previous exercises that we had done identifying those emissions that included that additional buffer zone.
If we did an exercise that did not include what's with that 7 mile radius, you can now add to what was pointed out in that original exercise. I can't remember the timing of if we had had the 7 mile radius in there when we did the first.
Yeah, it was. I think it was meeting 3 and 4 where we did both exercises. It was the original boundaries and the second one was a 7 mile radius. And then from there, unless I'm mistaken, we walked away with consensus of the 7 mile radius and its emissions inventory.
Correct. Okay. You are correct. You are not mistaken.
Okay.
And thank John, we'll go over a little bit more of that in just a bit.
Yeah. Anyone else? Tom.
I think we're meeting too early for quite a few people here. 5:30 is too early.
Okay.
I want to go back to the original. We could take a vote if you want. I don't think there was consensus at the last meeting to change that time.
Okay.
Just a couple people wanted to meet earlier, but there's people here that work during the day, including myself.
Okay, Tom.
And just getting here at 5 to get a little food was too early for me.
Okay. Anyone else? Nothing? Okay, so let me introduce John Klassen. He's the Program Director of Strategies and Incentives for the district. He's going to basically present the air monitoring plan development. And on his last slide, which we're going to keep up, is basically what we need in terms of feedback from the committee. So, John, with that, I'll hand it over to you.
All right, thank you, Jimmy. Great to be back here tonight. Everybody, I'm John Klassen. I'm the Director of Strategies and Incentives at the Air District, and I was here a couple of months ago talking initially about air monitoring here in Shafter, what that could look like, going over some of the elements of the air monitoring plan that we're going to be developing for Shafter. So I'm going to give a really brief update tonight, presentation. Some of the information is similar, some of it's a bit different, but I just want to take a few minutes to go through this, and then we want to get your feedback specifically on where monitoring should happen here in Shafter, which can include the 7-mile buffer zone. We want to get your thoughts on that. And the details that we have in here is just focused in the city of Shafter. But if you have thoughts on where air monitoring could be placed outside of there within the 7-mile radius, we want to hear those thoughts too. We're open to that. So please give us your thoughts. So just an update on the air monitoring plan itself. We're continuing to work through that, drafting that up, addressing the 14 elements that are required from the AB 617 blueprint, which we went over a couple of months ago. And ongoing feedback from the committee here will be very helpful in us finishing up the drafting of this plan so we can bring it back and have you review it. Some of the feedback we've heard so far over the last few months here in Shafter regarding air monitoring and sources of emissions, there's been a lot of interest in having DPR continue their pesticide monitoring and that be included in the plan here for Shafter. There's been a lot of conversations about expanding pesticide monitoring in Shafter, both here in the community and then outside the community as well. There's been discussion of monitoring VOC emissions from oil and gas facilities, concerns about emissions from dairy operations around the Shafter community, monitoring for various mobile sources, vehicles, trucks, and trains in the area. And we've also had some comments on wanting to do some PM10 monitoring here in town to capture emissions from harvesting activities. So once we have a plan drafted through working with you, we'll keep bringing those pieces back and having you review them as we get things completed. Just a reminder of what we have here that we're developing for Shafter. We're going to have a full-scale mobile air monitoring trailer that this picture here on the top right shows what this looks like. It's going to be able to do a lot of different things, PM2.5, ozone, black carbon, carbon monoxide, NO, NO2, and NOx, VOCs, H2S, SO2, toxics, speciated VOC, and meteorology. So this is something that we can have a lot of flexibility and do a lot of different things here in Shafter. We're going to have a mobile air monitoring van dedicated here as well, and it's going to do a lot of the same things, not quite as much as a trailer, but it's going to have a lot of capabilities, and we'll be able to take measurements in this van, both in a stationary mode as well as driving around and taking measurements while we're driving, so it'll be pretty flexible. We're going to have a compact multi-pollutant air monitoring system. That's that picture on the top left there. It can measure a number of things, PM2.5, ozone, black carbon, CO, NO2, and NOx, SO2, VOC, and meteorology in a smaller compact unit that we can easily move around. We'll have a number of standalone PM2.5 instruments, like on the top right, that we can put in different parts of the community here. And that picture on the bottom there is the one that's operating currently at the Shafter DMV site, which we have noted there. We'll have ongoing monitoring at Shafter DMV. We could also do, on top of this, what we're planning, we could also do some saturation monitoring studies here in Shafter. We can have a lot of different monitors put throughout the region, the area, to get a understanding of how emissions can vary spatially across the area to understand where peaks can be at different times of the year. And in this monitoring, in these resources we're building, we can also leverage with what CARB is doing in the area and any community monitoring resources that are going on. So this question came up in a letter that was sent from some of the steering committee members to the district here, which was shared with the committee here on thinking about the prevailing wind direction in Shafter, and we can think about that when we talk about where we could place monitors here in the area. And this is a wind rose here. This is the average of the years 2015 to 2017. And there are a few ways to display a wind rose. Oftentimes, the direction of the little slices here point to where the wind is coming from. This one is showing where the wind is going to. So the longer little slices here are showing that for the most of the year, the wind goes from the northwest to the southeast, which is kind of the flow, the general flow of the wind throughout the San Joaquin Valley. We see that. And then the different colors here are the wind speeds. So we can see the highest wind speeds tend to come from the northwest to the southeast. Looking at different quarters here, instead of averaging the entire year, these are different times of the year. We can see there's some variation. In the first quarter, we see a little bit more wind flow going from the southeast to the northwest, which is expected during the wintertime. We can have that reverse flow. But quarters two, and then on the next slide, quarters three, it's definitely more dominant going from the northwest to the southeast. And then quarter four, again, in the wintertime, we see more wind flow going from the southeast to the northwest. So it's something to keep in mind as we think about where we could place monitors initially and where we can move things around to better capture emissions in the area. This map here might be a little hard to see on your slide, but this is just showing a potential setup for the initial equipment we'll have here for Shafter. I can just kind of walk through this, and we definitely want to get your thoughts on this for the placement of monitors. We'll do that here in a few minutes, but this is an initial setup. So right in the center of Shafter here is the Shafter DMV site that ARB operates, and we at the Air District have some equipment there. We now have PM 2.5 operating there at the DMV, which you have a link to that. You can watch that and view that. That'll continue there. Up on the north part of the map here is DPR's current pesticide monitoring site. That's up at the elementary school up on the north part of town. And there are a few other symbols on here. The compact multi-pollutant system, which is the kind of that small trailer. We have some locations. We've been looking at some, and I want to go back and talk more about, remind you guys, we've been trying to look at secure locations, have access to power, looking in the area of Shafter where we can do that. We need to be thoughtful about where we're putting these things. So based on some of that research we've done, these are locations that we think could work initially, and we definitely want to hear your thoughts. So the little compact trailer there, that's located at a park down in that area. We have a few other PM 2.5 instruments placed at elementary schools and parks in the area. The trailer on the kind of the bottom right-hand side there, that's down located in a more industrial area of town, which could be a good location for that since that can do so many different things. And then we have a few potential expanded pesticide monitoring locations if we end up doing that, perhaps getting three more so we can kind of have the outskirts of the town surrounded by pesticide monitoring. So this is just potential. We want to get your thoughts on these locations. If you have other ideas where they could be placed in town, let me just go to the questions here. Where they could be placed in town, if it's just going to be in town here or outside of it within the 7-mile boundary, we want to hear about that too, what those locations could be. We want to hear about if you have any other sources of concern here in the Shafter area that we should be monitoring, and how frequently perhaps these assets should be moved around, if they should stay there for a year, move them to another location for another year. We want to get your thoughts on that. And just to remind you, the air monitoring van that we'll have, if we can't get our equipment out everywhere, that's something we can use to take measurements throughout a lot of different areas as we need to. So that's going to be a really flexible tool that we'll have to do some different things. So that's it for my quick update, and we'd like to turn it over to the committee to get some more thoughts on these questions here.
Great. Thank you, John. So in its simplest form to the committee members, And for you folks in the public, you'll have an opportunity to weigh in, but we want to reserve that till the end of tonight's meeting. But for the committee specifically, there are three goals here. We've got source, we've got location of monitoring, and then we've got frequency. So why don't we just open it up? I'm sorry, Jamie.
Just very quickly. Hello? Yes. Very quickly, the district did receive a letter from Tom and Gustavo. We emailed that letter out today to the committee members, and it does discuss a little bit of monitoring, so you can review that. We just got it out today, so I apologize about that. But if you're wondering what that is and you know why that said is kind of tagging along with this, it's a letter, and we wanted to share it with the entire committee at the request of Tom and Gustavo.
Great. Thank you, Jamie. So starting out with the committee, let's talk about sources. So all of you have had some thoughts in our past four meetings in terms of sources. You kind of want to weigh in, and we'd like to get that up on the board, and we just really want to narrow down the sources of monitoring.
Just going to go around?
No, well, yes, we can, if you want to start here. Yeah, go ahead, Tom or Angelica. Angelica, can you?
Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I know that there's not any monitoring for the PM10. Is it possible to add that on with the current equipment?
Yeah, certainly. If that's of interest to the committee, we can add that and make plans for that. Do you have any thoughts on where that should be placed in the area?
Probably along Golden and Oak area, especially to monitor diesel emissions along Laredo near that area, because there's at least
sound like it.
Yeah. There you go.
It always happens. Should I try to repeat all that, or?
Yeah, I guess you're talking about the
I've got it here, but.
What was the location again?
Okay, sorry. Like near Golden Oak? Yeah. For about a year, just to see if that makes much of a difference, or what's the impact there with the deaths and the diesel emissions. Also, what's the monitor, the one at Sequoia, what is that one measuring?
Is that on the north end of town?
I believe so, because
That's the DPR pesticide air monitoring site.
I mean, I probably wasn't told about this, but I don't know about everyone else, if they were aware that it got moved to that location and when. Like, what was the reason for it?
Yeah, and we have some DPR staff here, but I think it was moved from the high school up to Sequoia just recently. And maybe you could share a few comments about the why that happened.
Hi, I'm Randy Sadow with DPR. Yeah, we originally were at Shafter High School. We moved it to Sequoia about a month ago, I believe now. And that was due to some construction now occurring at Shafter High School. We were actually near a well, and now they're actually doing construction there, and so they asked us to move it.
Oh, okay. And mostly, what is the deciding factor for these monitors that are at different locations? Like, what was the deciding factor and the basis for the different monitors and what they should measure in these locations that you're planning to put them at?
Yeah, the initial design here was really aimed at just trying to get a uniform spread of measurements throughout Shafter. So if the committee has different thoughts on sources within Shafter where they feel like different pollutants should be measured in different areas, we'd love to hear that feedback to help kind of modify this initial thought.
All right. For now, on that topic, that's about it.
Thanks, Angelica. Tom?
I want to emphasize what Angelica just said, that I also want to see a PM10 monitor. For me, if it goes where your PM2.5 one is, that's fine. But it needs something to run there, and I'd like to see it online every day, like the PM 2.5. And then it has to run, you know, through the harvest season. That's when our dust is, you know, starting in July. It's going to really kick up and gets worse through August, September, October. The Angelica also mentioned Golden Oak Elementary, which is on Laredo Highway. Measuring the impact of the diesel trucks on the playgrounds right there, there's both a preschool and the kindergarten playground. with a stop sign at each site where the trucks stop and then take off. So we need a lot of monitoring there so you pick up the worst impacts of that diesel traffic. It's hard to predict what time of day you're going to get the most trucks through there. It's going to get a lot worse as well during the harvest season. So in late July, August, September, there's going to be a lot more trucks coming through there. But we want to know what it's like right now as well. And when the kids are outside playing, you know, when they're inside, the impact's a lot less. But they're out there on the playground, right next to the street there. And when everybody's walking to school as well, there are all these trucks stopping and starting.
Tom, what's the specific cross street, Laredo Highway and what, that you're
it's
referring to?
Golden Oak Elementary. There's two stops.
Okay.
There.
Okay.
All right.
Golden Oak.
Yeah, it's easy to figure out.
Okay.
So other than that, I'm not ready to suggest any monitoring sites without some answers to those questions we submitted. I don't want to speculate on maybe you should monitor here or there at this time. We need more information. We didn't hear anything about JP Oil, which is just on the south side of town, completely missing from the inventory so far. We didn't hear anything about the dairy emissions. We might want to monitor dairy emissions. I can't say that for myself until I get more information. And I just don't want to throw anything out there right now. It's without that inventory, it's too early.
But we can identify JP Oil and dairies.
Well, that's missing data.
Okay.
That's missing data. But if you look at the list we sent out that's now been mailed to everyone, you'll see that request on there, together with a lot of other information
okay. That
we need before we can seriously talk about where the best monitoring should be. Now, if you want to monitor pesticides more frequently than once a week, that would be great, at different locations as well. I mean, we got that information from DPR. That could be expanded on, of course. But that's it for right now.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Antonio? No, John.
Yeah, no, I'm with Tom. I think we need to sort of see what comes out of this letter that they sent. And, I mean, as far as the locations you have here, they all look, I think, good for determining what's actually happening within the proper part of, when I say proper, the larger part of Shafter. But I'm sure that there's more area out there that need to be tested.
Just to comment on that real quick, I just wanted to make the point, too, that the equipment that we have here, we're developing it to be very mobile. We can move things around. So even if we start with this initial setup, it's not set in stone. We can move things around as we learn more about the emissions in the area and need to make changes.
Can you operate some of it off of portable power generators and those kinds of things? Do you absolutely have to be at a spot that has...
That's probably possible, but a concern with using generators is that the emissions from the generator could influence the measurements you're taking, and you know that could kind of muddy the waters a little bit. Yeah.
Maria? No? Gustavo?
Yeah, I want to also relay the fact that I don't know if we really should be moving on with the conversation of the air monitoring piece if we, like I said, don't, because what you guys have here, this the map that says the potential locations for AB617 monitoring, already the potential plan that you guys have is well within the 7-mile radius that we had discussed.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how beneficial it even is to continue to have this conversation if what was identified as being outside of the original boundary in the 7-mile radius. We've talked about this on 3-4 meetings already, and they're still not here, and they're missing. And again, without having California Air Resources Board and the Valley Air District really address the area source pollution, DPR really, and the local act commissioner really, you know, stepping forward and really kind of hashing out a plan on how these emissions and where these emissions are coming from to start monitoring. I mean, I think the maps are great, you know, on the wind, on the prevailing wind stuff, but this potential location for this monitoring, it's, I mean, just looking at it, it's very well and deserving of what this community deserves when it comes to the data collection piece, right? Because there's other communities that have had tons of data collection. This community, that Red Dot ARB AMS, that's really one of the only ones that has been the right. There's been additional ARB and other projects, but I mean, I'm very hesitant to move forward and suggest stuff. I mean, we've already done this out of the 7 mile radius, right? So I'm not sure how much more additional information there really needs to be given if we've already identified that. I mean, if it's possible, let's pull out the old maps that and I think that would really solve some of our questions that we have for today. I definitely don't feel comfortable moving forward with the conversation of air monitoring without knowing the emissions, right? So if it's, you know, if it's, I forget the word, but the intent to do that, but it's not, the intent is not shown in this slide.
John, do you want to address that?
Yeah, so Brian, when he comes up, he can talk a little bit more about the emissions in the area and the ongoing work we're doing, and I understand that that's an ongoing piece of work. We're trying to collect more data of the emissions, and with that, we can get some more feedback on monitoring locations. Thank you.
I think that this is really good. I think that we need to start monitoring something for us to be able to move this along. So I just want to say that I like this.
So one thing that's been brought up is all the new construction for the high-speed rail that's going on there on 43 and Kimberlina.
Kathy.
I have a question in regards to the T-Lone incident that happened last year. Where was the monitor placed of the DPR monitoring site? Was it in the high school or?
Yes, at high school.
So is it a coincidence that they moved it to the Sequoia or? I understand that you told us that it was because of construction, but I'm just wondering, is there a potential of bringing it back to the high school to see how the levels of the T-loan are in the area?
It's possible. Do we have a good idea on when construction might be completed? And I don't have a real good idea about that. So at this point, I'm not sure. That said, the new Sequoia site is actually closer to our cultural fields than Shafter High is.
Since you moved it last month, how many testing, how many samples have you gotten from that area?
I believe maybe 5, 6, something like that, but we don't have results yet. It takes us several months to get results from the laboratory.
I appreciate the Windrose information. That was one thing we were asking for. And it's pretty clear that the wind moves 360 degrees at different times of the year. And it kind of almost looks like the wind hardly moves to the northeast, because those are the shortest lines. But to me, that's almost the most dangerous direction. When you see real small wind movement in a certain direction, that's when, if there's something crazy in the air, it's going to harm your health. And the wind's not blowing it away quickly. It's just stuck there. You're stuck with it. So there's no, I want to emphasize, there's no direction on this Windrose where anybody's really safe from anything that could happen within a mile or two of Shafter. Because on the still air days in the winter, that's the worst time. And if the air is just creeping along, you can be poisoned pretty severely from almost any direction, depending on the time of day. And those long red arrows when the wind's blowing kind of hard in the afternoons on summer days, you know, local pollution sources are pretty much being pushed away at that time. So it's the yellow lines that are probably the most important for looking at air pollution and which way the wind is moving. So I wouldn't discount any direction on the windrows there.
John.
Just to be clear about the windrows, though, it's also the frequency. It's not the wind will blow in the northwest direction far less frequently than it blows in the southeast direction. So that,
right.
It,
yeah.
It may blow. I don't think these windrows are necessarily, or these are given the velocity or the force of the wind. It really is how often and how much.
It actually shows both. It shows the directionality, which is the longer that slice is, the more frequently it blows in that direction. The colors on there are the wind speeds themselves.
Okay.
So it, it tells you both. Yeah.
Okay. The monitoring stations, though, monitor 360 degrees. So a monitoring station any place here in Shafter is going to tell you, well, can it give... I guess you can go back and you won't know the time of day. The samples are just 24 hours a day.
Well, it depends. Some of the equipment will be operating as every hour, and we have wind direction measurements every hour as well, so you can look at peak concentrations we've had, look at wind direction, which can kind of help isolate where it's coming from.
So we'll have that ability.
Right, we'll have that. Yeah.
Aquí en el mapa yo estoy mirando que se está poniendo mucho énfasis en la avenida 43. Pero Lerdo es también muy transitada. Está muy con mucho tránsito de semáis, de troques. Desde el 99 hasta el 5. Y sería bueno que se nos explicara también un poco de eso, porque hacia el 5 están hay lecherías. Y hacia el 99, pues hay compañías de roof, de varias compañías, ¿no? Sí, estaría bueno que también se enfocara por la Lerdo Boulevard a mí. Es una opinión, son.
Okay. Anyone else regarding the air monitoring plan? Gustavo.
It'll be quick. On the for the standalone PM2.5 monitors that the district will be deploying, what instruments will those be?
They're the MET1 BAM 1022 instrument, and it measures PM2.5 in real time, so we'll get a reading every hour.
And those are regulatory reference?
Regulatory, yeah.
Okay. And then the pesticide monitoring in the potential location, that's something that will be in junction with DPR? Will it be like a DPR ARB scenario like it was previously, or will Valley Air District now be participating in that?
That's something that we'll have to keep developing with DPR and ARB and what that will look like. Yeah, that's still ongoing.
And on the for the VOCs, the monitors for the VOCs more or less will be the trailers and the mobile monitoring? Would it be like a standalone VOC monitor?
So the VOC instrumentation that we'll be operating needs to be in an enclosed, air-conditioned, you know, climate-controlled environment for it to work properly. I'm not aware of any that can operate just out in the open. Like the BAM 1022 can be out in the cold and the heat and still operate. For the VOCs, we're a little more limited on keeping it inside of a climate-controlled enclosure.
Okay.
Just wanted to ask too, as you're thinking about this, if anybody has comments on how frequently equipment could be moved around. There may be a number of locations that we're monitoring, but we would want monitoring to happen. Do you want it there 6 months, a year, then move it? If you guys have any thoughts, that would be great to hear that too. That's a good question. I mean, this is a new program. This is kind of a new thing that we're doing. I would recommend at least to get the emissions for an entire a full year. It'd be nice to have something in place for a year, see the cycle of all the seasons, see what it's like before moving it somewhere else. But you may have different thoughts.
Me parece muy buena idea, porque el reporte que nos dieron la junta pasada nomás está hasta el 2017. Hasta el 2017. So, nos gustaría saber que si ha subido o ha bajado en el 2018. Ya pasó un año, ya estamos en el 2019. Y para ver si las mismas contaminaciones están igual, o han bajado o han subido. Y eso sería un modo de empezar a partir de cómo poder mover o qué se puede hacer, hacia dónde se pueden ir los monitores, qué es lo que está más alto, los pesticidas.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
Tom.
So I have a question about the air district monitoring in general, for compliance with rules and things. So let's say there's a facility with pipes and tanks and different gases going here and there, and there's a leak that is above the permitted level. You know, they're out of compliance. How does Air District normally detect that violation? Because you issue violations then. When these things are either reported or you find out about them. How do you find out about those leaks?
So we may have to take a note of that. I don't have a whole lot of background in our compliance process and enforcement. Maybe some other staff here who have more background could answer that a bit.
Jamie.
Yeah.
Tom.
There are basically three different ways that we'll find out. Sometimes it's self-reported. Sometimes...
Leak like that,
report the dog. Yep. If it's in that industry, it may be something else. But self-reported, so that's number one. Number two is going to be when our compliance inspectors go out on their inspection schedule. And then three, and probably most vital, is when you guys contact us. And you guys have done a great job, and we're trying to be even more responsive to those things that you see anyone in the world that they see or they just question. I know I saw one today that ended up being an ag burn, but I thought there's some big black pillar of smoke over on that side of town. So that's basically the main three ways, but you know, we are throughout this entire process. If there's a better way to do it, you have a suggestion, please let us know.
Well, what you mentioned about inspectors going out. The inspector goes out, how do they detect that something's out of compliance? Do they have machines to measure? So they're... Well, I'm just wondering if monitoring can start to detect something like that, or do you need to have a FLIR camera that's looking at the location everywhere? I'm not suggesting any monitoring right now. I just want to know what's possible. What can be detected and what equipment do you need if we're not just going to go on self-reporting? Maybe everybody's honest, I don't know. But it seems to me that the fines can be quite large when a violation is found. questions was what kind of fines in the past that facilities around Shafter have been given for violations that were reported or found out.
Thank you, Tom. Let's wrap this up. John, you've got some...
Yeah, just one last thought and comment on this. Thanks for all the feedback. I know some questions here were focused on needing more emissions inventory data for areas we don't have yet to give us better feedback on where we can place monitoring. Since it takes a while to get monitoring in place and it's going to take some time to get all that emissions data put together and compiled for people to look at, like I showed on the map here that we're looking at as the initial network, even if we move forward with this initial design, it can change in the future as we learn more about emissions in the area. We're supposed to have our monitoring system in place by July 1st, so looking at the timeline, we're already in the middle of April. It would be nice to get some of this already getting going, talking with the landowners, getting things set up to get things put in place, so by July we'll have some initial monitoring going. And then as we learn more, if the direction is to do something differently, we can move things around in different locations if we need to. Are there any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, that sounds good. I think the only thing that was not stated was adding the additional identified sources in that additional 7 mile radius, which were the dairies and the oil gas fields to the north and the south.
Thank you. Please, after the meeting, or if any committee members of the public, we've taken copious notes, so you can refer back to some of the statement by the committee members. John, that's it? Okay, thank you for your presentation on air monitoring plan. So we've got Brian Clements, our program manager from the Air District, Alejandro from CARB, and Randy from DPR to give a very, very short technical assessment update. So if you can move on up here, Alejandro and Randy. Thanks, Sean. Just give the address. Okay, a little technical difficulty, but Cody, if it's not coming up, just have Brian roll through. Go ahead, Brian, if you...
I'm Brian Clements. I'm the technical services manager, and we deal with the emission inventory. I was going to touch on what we started talking about at the beginning of this meeting, which was an update on where we're at with the stationary source emissions inventory. When I was here a few months ago, I went over the emissions inventory for our point sources, our stationary sources, area sources, and mobile sources within the original boundary of the community of Shafter. Since then, we've compiled that emission inventory for our stationary sources and locations of all those sources within the 7 mile radius. We're having a little difficulty getting it up on the screen here, but on our website, on the Shafter portion of the district's website, we have this, here we go.
Thank you, Cody.
Can you zoom out a little bit? Yeah, perfect. Here we go, just so you can see the visual. And so on this website, here's the map of Shafter inside. Actually, you can expand it by using this little square here. And you'll see now what I was talking about originally. So this was the original analysis that was done of our sources and emissions, including area mobile sources within this community here. Since then, and based on the 7 mile radius, we've located our permanent facilities and have compiled the inventory from these facilities as well. And if you select any single one of them, you'll see the inventory for those facilities. So if you click on it, this window pops up, gives you some basic information about that permitted facility there. It gives you some emissions inventory information. That stays up until you hit the X, and then you can move on to wherever you're interested, looking at, zooming in and out. And the colors are basically, if you go back a screen, it gives you the source type. So there's a legend here with the different colors. All the sources outside of the community, but inside the 7 mile radius are just generally marked in this gray blue color, just so you know what that is. So basically, that's the update on emission inventory for our stationary sources. One thing we wanted to do, and what's planned by the next meeting, is to, as part of this display or map, is have different layers, which will include our area source emissions that ARB is helping us compile, and which they'll give us a status update on next, as well as mobile sources. And then on top of that, we also plan to add other layers of interest, like sensitive receptors, could be schools, hospitals, certified daycare centers, things like that, so that really whatever the area of interest is, you can get into our website and this web tool and have a little interaction with it, and you can, you know, dive in a little closer and you know, find areas you're concerned about and give us feedback on that, or ask us any questions about it. And then one final thing is, if you actually back up one level here, like I was saying, in the map, you can click on a facility and get those facilities' emissions, but if you want the entire community and those sources inside the radius, you can click on the different pollutants here, and it opens up a summary document with all of those totaled up. So here's all the facilities within the boundary, and then if you scroll down, which is a little bit difficult here, hold on. It has all those facilities listed below. Oh, scrolling's not working too well here. Apologize for that, but oh, here we go. All the facilities in the radius are listed here. Okay, so there's two tables. And then that goes, that's the same. I'll give you that was a NOx example that I clicked on, but it's really for NOx, VOCs, PM2.5. We'll also end up with toxic air contaminants here as well as the area source and mobile emissions. Okay. Yeah. I think we wanted to have the entire inventory at the ARB go talk about their area source and mobile source. And then go around with questions.
Tom, can we just wait till after we get CARB and DPR? So if you can just hold. Okay, we're done? Okay, Alejandra. So, we need our PowerPoint up.
And I work with the California Air Resources Board, part of the Community Emission Inventory Group. I'm here today from the district's request to present to you guys on the mobile and area source methodology and methodology and assumptions. And I'm accompanied today with my colleague, Robbie Morris, actually sitting over there in the back. So we've been working with the district and CARB has been working on creating the emission inventory for the community. We've been working really hard and we're making really good progress. And by the end of the month, we'll provide the district with the mobile and the area-wide emissions. And we'll be able to discuss with you guys later on in a different steering committee meeting. I want to show you guys a presentation, a quick video that shows you guys the enhancements that we are doing to create the community emission inventory. And we presented this video to our CARB board back in March. our board meeting back in March. And for this, and then once the video is done, I'll give you guys a little bit more information on how we're bringing that regional scale of the emission inventory back down to a community scale. For now, I'm going to give you an example of Imperial, which is one of the communities we are also working on. Can I get the video up there? Just get a couple seconds to get the video. Oh, it's not connected to speakers? Okay. Okay, so it has sound, but we're gonna adjust to that right now. So we started off with the regional scale. Is it playing? Okay. So we're starting off with our state implementation plan scale, which is at a regional scale, county scale. And what this is how we typically do the emission inventory. But what we want to do is focus down on the community. So here we have the Calexico, Heber, and El Centro community. And we usually do grid emissions, so either 4K or 1K grid, depending on what information we have. So this will give you an image of how the mobile source is distributed using these grids. So we're trying to get that information from the grids onto the roads, which is not only VMT, but also emissions onto the roads. So we're looking at NOx, CO, PM, diesel PM. When it comes to the area source inventory, we also start off with these grids, and we're trying to bring all of these emissions that are usually captured in the grids back to the point sources. And this was done, or this is unusually communicating with the district and the community members to figure out where in the community these sources are happening. So we went from the grid emissions down to point sources. And then for the stationary source inventory, we work with the district on making sure we have those stationary points within the community boundary. And then I believe this is talking about being able to see the emissions in overall, all the different sources happening in the community together and how they all overlay, similar to what the map that Brian was showing you guys.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Okay. Does everybody have a copy of the printout?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. I'm going to get a printout, and you can just follow along with that. You have one? There you go. Okay. So I believe that was slide 4, where we can go out from. Okay. So the first area I wanted to talk about more in detail was the on-road mobile sources and how did we get from that gridded emission down to the roads. So what we did is we took the activity and VMT data from the MPO links and did a spatial resolution onto the common roads within the community. So you can see in the first picture, you have the MPO links. We transposed them into the census Tigra roadway, so just every those streets that you see within the community. And that way, we're able to get VMT information, vehicle miles traveled information, and emissions onto those roadways. Oops, too far. For the off-road mobile sources, we have two different types of sources. We have the facility sources and the non-facility sources. For those facility sources where we actually have activity data and where that activity is happening within the community, we're trying to move those emissions outside of the grid into those actual locations. And for the non-facility sources where we have no information overall, we're going to keep that that gridded information and just focus on the community rather than looking at the whole county, but still predict those county emission levels down to the community. And the data that we use is coming from reporting requirements, voluntary reporting surveys, and purchase data sources for off-road. For the area sources, we're starting off with those countywide emissions on the 4K grid. And we're trying to move all the sources that we can from that grid into the location that they're actually occurring. So for those emissions that are spread out over a certain area that can be moved back to a specific location, those include gas stations, dry cleaners, auto body shops, and print shops. For those emissions that they don't really have a spatial resolution, that they're kind of overall not a specific location, they're still staying in the grid. And some examples of those are consumer products, road dust, and architectural coatings. And as with the off-road, we're trying to move as many of those emissions back to the original sources. So that's what we have. We're working on so far, and like I said, we're creating the ERA source and the mobile source emission inventory, and we'll be passing on that information on to the district by the end of the month. But if you have if the community members have any suggestion of these locations of what the activity is, and can improve the current emission inventory, then we'll take those requests.
Come on up, Randy.
As I mentioned earlier, I'm Randy Sagawa. I'm Special Advisor with the Department of Pesticide Regulation. And we talked about pesticides in depth at the last meeting, but I do have some new information that DPR just received in the last week or two. This is some new air monitoring data for several communities in Kern County, including Shafter. So this is what we refer to as one of our seasonal community monitoring studies done in 2018. This monitoring is done by the Air Resources Board at the request of DPR. Monitoring was conducted in five communities in Kern County: Arvin, Delano, Lost Hills, Shafter, and Wasco. Monitoring was done for a 10-week period between March 12th and May 18th of last year. And we are looking for 11 different pesticides, all of which that we call organophosphates, such as chlorpyrifos. Organophosphates are a group of chemicals. Almost all of them are insecticides. A lot of them are commonly used, and they all have the same mechanism of action. And so they have all the same, very similar toxic effects. And so we look at them often together so we can get a cumulative estimate as to what the air concentrations look like. In this case, chlorpyrifos was our most frequently detected pesticide among the five sites, and it had the highest, at least, individual concentration. To give you a little bit more detail, the map here shows the locations of the monitoring sites. In the case of Shafter, Air Resources Board was at that same DMV sites that's being used for other monitoring. And then we have a variety of different schools and other locations in the other communities. And then this last slide shows the maximum, the highest concentrations that were detected for each of the pesticides and where it was detected. So in the case of chlorpyrifos, our highest concentration was this 126 nanograms per cubic meter. That was detected in Arvin. And what we refer to as our health screening level in that last column, that indicates or is a trigger for DPR to conduct a more detailed evaluation if we exceed that level. And so if concentrations are below that level, we think that in general things are all okay and there's no need to take a closer look at it. And if you look at all the numbers on the left, compare them to the numbers on the right, you can see all the maximum air concentrations are quite a bit below our screening levels, indicating, for, at least in this particular study, pretty low health risk within these communities during these time periods. And that's all I have.
Great. Thanks, Randy. So we don't have a lot of time on this update, but Tom, you had a question for Brian, I think.
Well, okay, for Brian, you have the map up there. If you would have clicked on that on one of those dairies, would anything have shown up, any information?
All the information about the facility as far as the name and, you know, what's going on.
No, emissions.
Emissions, no, we don't have those point source or our permitted emissions in this inventory, and that's because they're in ARB's area source emissions at this time. So that's one thing that we want to identify, and at the end of the day have that available.
Okay, now there's another question. It's my understanding that every stationary internal combustion engine of a certain size has to be permitted, right?
Correct, 50 horsepower.
So you know above 50 horsepower, so you know where they are. All the ones that have been permitted, you know where they are, what size they are. Do you have emission data on those engines?
So if you're talking about dairy
engines? No, I'm talking about internal combustion engines that are stationary in the 7-mile radius, like irrigation pumps, oil pumps.
Right, so we have permits for those. We know the locations of the facilities. We know the locations of most of the engines. If they have been or on an inspection schedule, and we have emissions we have the inventory for them, except if they're ag pumps for if they're ag pumps, again, all ag processes are under the area source inventory currently.
So we want to see, whether it's CARB or you,
right,
those locations and the data, the emissions data, for all stationary source engines, assuming they're permitted, in the 7-mile radius. All right? For CARB, you're talking about, like, you're trying to narrow down the traffic flow and how many cars and trucks are going down each road, is that right?
Yes.
So you understand that in an area like this, the truck traffic is not the state average for emissions. It's a lot of ag trucks are here that are very dirty.
Yes.
And you take that into account when looking at the number of trucks that drive around Shafter and what their emissions would be?
Well, we currently don't have the age distribution of what those trucks are that are happening on the road. But Robbie wants to talk a little bit more about it, because we do have a pilot testing program that will help us to do to figure out what that age distribution and what are those trucks coming through.
So one of the refinement tools that's part of this program is we're working with the district, and Brian, I know Sharanya had sent you a pilot study. So basically it's using a software. It's called an automatic license plate reader. So we're going to work with the Air District to come up with a pilot study and deploy that with you guys, looking at different locations throughout the community, including the 7-mile buffer. So you would have the opportunity to look at the proposal and look at those locations. And we did put something together recently that included some additional locations, because I know there were some concerns about some warehouse down in the bottom of the 7-mile border. So right now we have about 13 locations on a map with a proposed project scope that we'll be updating and sending to Brian, and he can share it with all of you. And you'll have the opportunity to provide input on that. And what that will do is that will give some age distribution of the trucks, and then we can look at the emissions from those and go from there. So it would be kind of like starting with a pilot study, and then you guys can figure out what you want to do for the future and continuing the study and doing more locations.
Okay, another question for CARB. I understand in January there was a requirement to receive reports on, like, methane leaks from oil and gas facilities. And you're supposed to, it's self-reporting, but you should be compiling these reports by now, I understand. Are we going to get to see those very soon for this area?
Vernon, do you, I know there's another division who works on the oil and gas leaks and programs, but I'll let Vernon Hughes from the Community Air Protection Program, he could probably speak to that.
Right. Hi, I'm Vernon Hughes with CARB, Community Air Protection Program. We don't have, with the folks here in the room today, we don't have a direct answer, but we can get an answer for that. Yeah, there's the SNAPS program that you may be familiar with that is going to be doing monitoring around oil production facilities, and there will be reporting of oil and gas leak information as well. But we can get you more information.
But facilities have already begun reporting, right?
I don't know the details myself on that, but we'll get you an answer.
And find out then if that reporting is public information.
Right.
You know, we want to see it if we can.
Yep. Yeah, understood.
Okay, and then on the pesticides. Last year, several thousand people in Shafter were poisoned by 1,3-D. That's pretty obvious. What level of poisoning? Well, we can look at the numbers. They were above the standard for certain areas. And this calls for action. Now, DPR could do this, perhaps. I don't know who else could do this, if the Air District has any say. But I think several people here, we could take a vote. I think
they would like to see to get notification when 1,3-D or chloropicrin or mancozeb or chlorpyrifos, those four minimum, when those are going to be sprayed within a couple miles of where people live, people should be notified in advance so they can, because you're not protecting us from this, but they can protect themselves. They can stay indoors, and schools can keep kids indoors for a couple days after those pesticides are sprayed. So how do we go about getting that notification system in place? It can be by phone, by text. There needs to be a notification so people can protect themselves, especially after what happened right here in Shafter a year ago. So is that up to DPR? Is that up to the local ag commissioner? Who do we go to get that notification system in place?
Well, right now there is no notification system, and so one would have to be developed. And so we'll take your suggestion under consideration. Now, that said, I would probably disagree with you that people were poisoned by 1,3-D last year or at any time. The air monitoring data indicates that we have not exceeded any of our health screening levels so far. Now, some of the samples were higher than they have been in the past, but we still have not exceeded our health screening levels.
Well, my impression was the 30-day level was exceeded.
It may be. Now, we don't have all the results for 2018. It may be that in 2018 we did exceed it, but we don't know for sure. If we did, then we are taking a closer look at 1,3-D and seeing if we need some additional control measures, some additional emission reductions for 1,3-D.
And I will repeat that OEHA has a much lower level for safety than DPR, and you did exceed OEHA's recommendation.
Again, I'm not sure about that. For the cancer risk, it's based on a lifetime exposure and not just on any single year.
Thanks, Randy. Tom, that's it. John?
Just one question, I think. Seems to be a lot of discussion about doing monitoring at dairies and specific sites. We will be doing monitoring within the broader community where people live, and I'm assuming that there'll probably be some monitoring in the 7-mile radius that includes the Colony and Cherokee Strip and areas that aren't in that original boundary. As I understand it, our purpose is to determine the impacts of those sources on those population centers, not necessarily to go out and find contaminants at each one of those sources that may not be getting to the population centers. Am I right? I don't mind getting the data. I don't mind looking at that. I just am a little bit concerned about that data being spread further than what it's really intended to do. No one wants to answer that.
Brian, you want to take that?
Did that make sense? I can be a little more clear.
So the question is, what's going to be the scope of the analysis, so to speak?
Well, I guess my point is that there's going to be monitoring stations here in the community. I'm assuming there'll be monitoring stations at the Colony and where people live. And there's a lot of talk about putting monitoring stations at a dairy or at a particular industry or someplace. And I understand the ability to go to look at pollutant sources and go back to the source and understand. I understand that there's an effort to do that, and I would like to better understand how that happens. But the purpose here is to get an assessment of the impacts of those industries on this lower income community, and not necessarily to just determine that there's a lot of methane coming from a dairy.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe that'll be something that Jessica talks about in the SARP presentation. But yeah, the point is to assess the impacts on the community.
On the population.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it. Gustavo, last question.
So just to piggyback on that most recent, I have the reading of the steering committee objectives of the committee that says the objectives are to identify area sources of pollution that impact communities within the community boundaries and within reasonable
distance, and it's quoted at the bottom as reasonable distance is a 7-mile radius. And it's meant to read the potential emission reduction program, air quality, and then determining the impact of the general public. So yeah, it is determining, it's also looking at the area sources of pollution because that's within the reasonable distance. So I think, yeah, it is to identify, and not only just to, for the state of collection, you know, the data, but also how it, you know, impacts the community, you know, in the general sense. So yeah, I think it is important, and it does look at monitoring locations that could potentially impact residents inside that are outside of the boundaries. And on the sources of pollution on pesticides, I think in meeting three, there was a list of four of the highest used pesticides and fumigants in the chapter with the appropriate mapping of, you know, where these locations are in parcels. So I think you guys already have, I mean, we already done some homework and you guys already have the list of the four most used. So I think, you know, looking at that DPR monitoring plan, those, I think, four would be some of the ones that you would look at first. And when it comes to the process of notification, it would be not every single, you know, restricted use pesticide, but looking at those top three, top four, using, you know, I mean, it's when you go into the Valley Plaza, you get how much viral coupons you get of Starbucks, or that's called geofencing. You could geofence all around Shafter and have only the people of Shafter get that notification process. Like, there's systems in place and there's technology in place to do this. It's 1,3-D chlorpyrifos, men's copies, and then the chlorpyrifos. And I'll let you have this copy, bro, if you want it.
Okay, Brian, Randy, Alejandra, thank you for your. Yep. Hang on, let's. Don't go anywhere, Randy.
Okay, I have a question on the results you got for the chlorpyrifos. You're talking about the Delano, your Arvin Delano. How about Shafter? There's no readings on the Shafter area, or there's.
Yeah, so the table only showed the highest reading among the five sites. For Shafter, there were two detections of chlorpyrifos.
Two detections
out of the approximately 40 samples that were collected.
Okay, where were the locations, do you know? Or
for Shafter, there was a single site at the DMV office.
No sensitive location like schools or?
At some of the other communities, yes, they were at schools, but here in Shafter was only at the DMV office.
What was the reason why leaving it at the DMV, not a sensitive area?
That we'd have to talk to Air Resource Board. This was an Air Resources Board study. They selected the sites.
Oh, they selected the
yeah.
sites?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I also have another question for a little bit of what Gustavo was saying, that there's four pesticides that are included to monitor mm-hmm. for the Shafter area. And if I'm not mistaken, chlorpyrifos is going through a TAC process, isn't it?
Correct.
So it's actually an air contaminant. Why should it not be considered as something very important to check in the Shafter area if it's already in the process? Like, T-lone and chlorpyrifos should be one of the top ones for this area. I just a suggestion.
Yes, and so at DPR's current monitoring site at Sequoia, we're monitoring for 31 pesticides, and that includes 1,3-D and chlorpyrifos.
So it is included?
Yeah, we have been monitoring for it since 2011.
Okay, and another question. Last time that T-lone, many years ago, in like the 1990s, when it exceeded the high levels of T-lone, DPR suspended it. Mm-hmm. Why did it not happen this time where it succeeded and it poisoned the city of Shafter?
Yeah, so We haven't necessarily exceeded any of our health screen levels. Even if we have, then we know a lot more about T-lone than we did back in 1990 when we first took that action. Back in 1990, We didn't have a good idea as to what was happening, how to reduce the emissions, and things like that. We have a much better idea now as to what's going on and how to control those emissions and reduce the exposures.
One question. If you are exposed to T-Lone, what are the side effects? And how would you tell a parent that has a kid that is a couple weeks old that their child's been poisoned with T-Lone if it exceeded at that time?
Okay. So different types of exposures will have different effects on people. Up until recently, the main health effect that we are concerned about has been cancer. You may know that we have a use limit, what we call a township cap, in place to limit the amount of use of T-Lone. And that's for long-term exposure. So cancer risk is over a lifetime exposure. Okay. And so a single exposure to a child or anybody else generally isn't enough to trigger cancer. Normally you need a repeated exposures over time. Okay.
Okay. This question is now for the Ag Commissioner right here. If the T-Lone exceeded for it was a lot of pounds used at that time. Was it a coincidence that it happened at, like, all those pounds were applied in the Shafter area, or it was just a notice of action that was just permitted at that time when it happened? Or do you know how much pounds were used?
Are you talking about a specific incident?
Yes.
I don't know off the top of my head exactly how many pounds. Can we figure it out? Yes. And as a result of that, that was, I believe there was a new regulation that extended the buffer time from 28 to 36 hours, and the grower or the applicator was unaware of that change, and they were within the proper amount of time for 2017, or for the previous year, but once January 1st came around, that had changed, and so they were not within that new time restriction. So as a result of that, we fined that applicator.
Okay.
Okay, so moving on the agenda, we've got 30 minutes left. So the CERP, the Community Emissions Reduction Program, was on the agenda last month. And Jessica, our air specialist with the district, was kind enough to come back. And she has a short presentation, and then we kind of want to do a little bit of a deeper dive, no different than what we did with the air monitoring plan at the beginning of the evening. So with that, Jessica.
Can you guys all hear me okay? All right. So I'm going to be going over the presentation that was the second to last in your packet, and then also walking you through this outline document that we've prepared, which is kind of our initial stab at the organization for the Community Emission Reduction Program, or our CERP. So my presentation is going to correlate with the with this outline and kind of walk you through and give you some additional details about each of these sections. I know the outline is a little light on information, but my presentation is kind of designed to do a deeper dive into each of these sections. So a little bit about me to start. I'm an air quality specialist at the district. I work in our planning department, and my team and I are going to be the ones that take some of the scientific assessment and the recommendations from the steering committee and write all that into the document that becomes our community emission reduction program. So I'll be kind of doing the, you know, behind the scenes technical typing and assembling everybody's input into this kind of meat and potatoes of the AB617 process. So I'm really excited to be here and get your feedback tonight. I will try to keep my presentation short and sweet and to the point, so it's not death by PowerPoint. And then hopefully there will be some good time for discussion at the end. So diving in, as you all know, AB617 was legislation established to make sure disadvantaged communities were not adversely impacted by air pollution. CARB's Community Air Protection Program implements AB617 statewide through a variety of measures, which includes expanded air monitoring, improve data accessibility and partnerships with communities. Kind of the, like I said, the meat and potatoes of this program culminates in the Community Emission Reduction Program, or our CERP, which is advised by our steering committee process and lays out a plan to reduce pollution in each of the selected AB 617 communities. So kind of everything you've been working through, this whole steering committee process, it's going to culminate in this document, which is our CERP, that's going to lay out some, so it's going to go through understanding the community. It's going to talk about our community partnerships and public engagement. It's going to address what the air pollution challenges are that are facing the community. And then it's going to lay out a plan for how do we address those challenges. Importantly, there's going to be an implementation schedule, as well as an enforcement plan, and then metrics to track our progress over time with annual reporting and then a five-year milestone. Those are all things that are laid out in CARB's blueprint, which is kind of their guidance for how to implement AB 617. And then Appendix C of that blueprint specifically addresses the criteria for community emission reduction programs. We sent out a link to the steering committee to that blueprint, and it's available online at CARB's website as well for the public. So first we have understanding the community. That's going to be the first section under our outline. So we'll go through the introduction, pretty much what I just said with the background about AB 617, referring to our outline here. We'll talk about health-based air quality objectives. So we want to make sure that everything we're doing in this plan is reducing toxic air contaminants, or PM2.5, which is going to have adverse impacts on public health. And then we'll jump into our understanding the community section, where we're going to talk about the community of Shafter, community boundaries, socioeconomic factors, and then the types of pollution impacting the community. There's going to be a technical assessment, which is like Brian and the CARB staff that was here talking to you, that's information that's going to do kind of a general outline of the pollution impacting Shafter. And then we'll also provide an analysis of existing air quality programs, the benefits of those existing programs have had to date in reducing pollution in Shafter, as kind of a first step as into what we can do better moving forward. Then we'll go through, we will outline the community partnerships and engagement process. So how the steering committees have gone, different opinions we've heard from steering committee members and the public. We'll do a summary of public outreach efforts and then a plan for public outreach moving forward. So something we'd really like the committee's input on is how we can do a better job with engagement in Shafter. Any ideas you have for outreach, we'd love to hear it. Please let us know. And then we're going to talk about identifying community air quality concerns. So this is a section that's not actually in CARB's blueprint, but we wanted to add it to our outline, to our CERP document, to really highlight the concerns that the steering committee has. So we've heard from the committee, Shafter is really concerned about pesticides, concerned about oil and gas, dairy, harvesting operations, impact of agriculture. We'll outline those sources, and then we're going to provide a technical analysis of those sources and how they're impacting the community. Sorry, guys. I stopped at 10-cup coffee on the way, and I got coffee, and now I'm, like, dehydrated. But that's the coolest coffee shop. Right. And then, so moving from the identifying and evaluating community air quality concerns section into our targets and strategies section of the outline, we're going to start with emission reduction targets and goals. And that is going to be a section that looks at emission reduction targets that we can achieve within 5 years. So this is going to be informed by steering committee input, but it'll be numerical goals for mobile, stationary, and area-wide sources of criteria air pollutants, including compliance goals, goals for deploying available technologies, and measurable goals for deploying or implementing exposure reduction measures at sensitive receptor locations, so schools, hospitals, community centers, things like that. Okay, and that's going to lead us to our pollution reduction strategy section. This is the heart of the SERP, and I can't, you know, dive into all of these sections today, but moving forward, we'll be scheduling additional meetings, depending on what you would like to hear more about, to talk about incentive funding strategies. Would you like to see more money, different programs, regulatory strategies? Mitigation strategies are going to be ways like maybe installing filters at schools to reduce the impact of existing pollution on sensitive sources. Other strategies, notification systems that we can work with DPR to implement. And then importantly, an implementation schedule, which sets out timelines for all of these strategies to make sure, you know, we stay on track, the steering committee can track our progress. Our enforcement plan is going to address a lot of the questions you've had, Tom, about, you know, what's our compliance history been for sources that are regulated in this community? What complaints have we seen? What violations have we seen? That's all going to be public record for 3 years going back. And then we'll, as part of that enforcement plan, we'll have a commitment to compliance strategies to help achieve our emission reduction targets. And then, like I said, we'll have metrics to track our progress over time. So there is required annual reporting, as well as a 5-year milestone. At that 5-year milestone, we will be looking at air quality monitoring data, emission reduction achievements that we can calculate through projects we've implemented in that 5-year period, and we'll be kind of doing a capstone analysis of how well this SERP has worked in Shafter and what the air quality results are. And then finally, I can't stress enough, we are on a really tight timeline for this SERP development. So we'll be working, obviously we're in our April meeting right now. We're going to hopefully get some good steering committee feedback on this outline in May. We will be talking about potential strategies. One of the questions I'll get to at the end of the presentation is what other presentations you would like to hear. Would you like to hear more about enforcement, incentives? What information can we give you to help you come up with strategies? And then note that in September, we need to take the final product to our governing board for approval because we have to forward this document to ARB in October. Following that, there's going to be the implementation and then annual reporting, and hopefully steering committee involvement kind of on an ongoing basis after that. So here is our contact information. I'm going to leave you with these questions for the steering committee that Jimmy's going to facilitate. I'll walk you through these a little bit. So comments or questions on the layout and components of the SERP. Do you have any suggestions about things you would like to see included that aren't included, or things you would like to see highlighted? Any suggestion on the order? What emission reduction funding programs would you like to see increased funding in Shafter? Do you have any ideas for additional incentive programs? What other topics would you like presentations on? Like I said, just let us know. We can schedule that. And then going back to what I was saying earlier, how can we work to increase the awareness of air quality programs and public engagement in Shafter? So we know there's a lot of good programs out there already. We know we can do a better job getting the word out. Do you have any ideas for that? I know, you know, the steering committee knows their community better than anyone. So if you know any sources, good places to post information, good outreach strategies, let us know. We'd love to hear your feedback. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Jessica. She's not going anywhere. Just like we did at the beginning of the meeting with John Klassen and the monitoring part of our agenda, just we want to go around and why don't we start on this side? Do you have anything? Brad? Everyone? You're all mute on this side of the room. David?
Gustavo, yes, come on.
And I'm not speaking for myself, man. I consult with folks before I come. But, you know, it's really emphasized in the blueprint that this is a community-led process, right? And I think a lot of the of our community members have spoken. So just like the map was presented to us, and we're participating in this. I think it's very important to keep that consciousness in this as well. When we participate, when we elaborate, when we share, I think it should be taken seriously. And when it comes to the layout of it, I think it should all be very seriously. And the only other thing was, so you'll be the one that kind of would be engineering the emission reduction plans?
So no. So I'm staff level, so I'll be writing it, but direction's definitely going to come from my management team and from you, the steering committee, as to what goes into it.
Cool. I think that was it. And okay. I think the only other thing, I think it died on me on purpose.
There we go.
air quality concerns, the ice, pesticide oil and gas, I see all that, but what I don't see was a heavy traffic from both diesel pollution and traffic and a train. I think that's been
absolutely
said very
absolutely, yeah. And so just to note, this isn't a comprehensive list at all.
Yeah.
We'll definitely be, you know, taking ongoing community feedback on that. This wasn't meant to capture all of the concerns, just kind of a high level, as in, like, examples of X, Y, and Z.
Cool.
But, yeah, no, thank you for your feedback.
Just a couple of things. One of the things I'm still a little bit confused about is what tools are going to be available to this committee to cause emission reductions.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've seen a couple of things that might change some legislation that would enable different things to happen, but I don't know what we'll actually be able to do to cause the reductions. The other thing that I noticed that's not in any of the presentations is that, and I realize that we have a very short time frame, but there's nothing there about cost benefit. It's, you know, what kinds of things that we might suggest and what the overall cost might be of those things and what the benefits might be. I'll use an extreme example, at least to me, and because dairies are talked about a lot.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there could be a dairy out here that's 7 miles away, and it's downwind, and it does have it has some air pollution that we're concerned about, but we aren't able to chase it back to our population. You know, I want to be very cognizant of, I want to be very cognizant of those kinds of issues. What the real benefit is of what we might suggest as far as causing the reductions.
Okay, so to speak to your first point, maybe something we could do for our next meeting is organize a presentation that goes over some of the potential strategies or tools that are available to the steering committee. Off the top of my head, I'm going to say there is quite a bit of funding available through AB 617. So a lot of what we can do is incentive-based.
Certainly I think that's great.
So ideas for incentives are going to be really important. But then, you know, you do have a few agencies involved here that do have regulatory authority. So if you have ideas for different rules and regulations, we can talk about that. As well as, I think, you know, it's going to come back to a lot of the incentives from mitigation strategies and things like that, where we can reduce the impact of pollution on sensitive receptors. But be thinking of, you know, if there's maybe we find a source of pollution that isn't under our regulatory authority, but we can provide funding for them to upgrade their equipment to a cleaner source, that would be an option, things like that. But maybe what we can do, and John can probably speak to this a little bit more than I can, but maybe what we can do is organize a presentation on not menu. That might be a question for the steering committee. Would you like to see a list of menu type options that you can, you know, maybe pick and choose from?
I think that's going to become pretty critical here, pretty quick.
Okay. So,
and if the impression is that we're going to be able to pass a whole bunch of rules that are going to make a whole bunch of changes and affect a whole bunch of industry, and we don't have that ability, then we need to know that.
Okay, yeah.
Sooner rather than later.
Absolutely, okay. So maybe we'll do some talking back at the district and definitely put that on the agenda for next time. And maybe we can come up. I know ARB has been working on a list of menu type options for enforcement and for their mobile sources. So maybe we can do something similar for sources within Shafter, kind of from our perspective. Would that what's community committee feedback on that? Is that something that sounds good to everyone?
Yeah. And if it, you know, if we do end up with regulatory abilities, then having that cost benefit becomes even more critical.
Absolutely.
Which is a time-consuming element.
And I think going back to that point, that's something that would definitely come up on a case-by-case, you know, basis, depending on your suggestion. There would have to be that cost-benefit discussion with the committee and also with the sources. You know, like, what can we do? How much is it going to cost? What's the reduction going to be? That all becomes a very, you know, real conversation at that time.
And it becomes difficult because, you know, for some people, it doesn't matter what it costs. It should just go away.
Right, yeah.
And for others, it means a lot more than, or a lot different than that.
Absolutely, yeah. Cool. Thank you for your feedback.
Okay, so again, like we said earlier, without more inventory information, it's hard to give well-thought-out ideas for a reduction, community reduction plan. But you heard one tonight already. The first idea we have for a community reduction plan is this idea of notification for when these pesticides are going to be sprayed, because it doesn't cost a lot of money, but I guarantee it will reduce the measurements there at Sequoia, because the applicators and the ag commissioner, everybody's going to be a lot more careful if notifications are going out beforehand.
Yeah, and I think it's so critical. Like you were saying, you'll be able to take measures to protect yourself. I think those are the ideas that we're looking for through this program, and we're really, you know, I think working together with the other agencies is exactly what AB 617 is designed to do.
Right, so that proposal's out there. And I want to take the chance, the person from DPR said there was no exceedance, but their own data we got last month showed that the 90-day 1,3-D exposure level was 5.6 parts per billion, and the screening level, which we know is not safe enough, is 3. So it was nearly double the current screening level, the exposure. That's why we say people were poisoned last year. If you're exposed to something above the safe level, you're being poisoned. I don't care if it's just giving you a headache for half an hour or if it's giving you cancer, you're being poisoned. And so I don't want someone to think that we didn't exceed the screening level last year for this pesticide. At least it's clear in the data they gave us last month. Finally, you're not going to really tell us right now till you hear some proposals how much money is available, or can we assume there's 20 or 30 million available for Shafter, or what?
Does anybody have that number off the top of their head? I know. I want to say there was like 80 Brian Dodds, maybe.
I would say yes.
Yes. Yes, we know that number. Yes, it's in the millions.
You're saying 80 million.
So there was 80 million.
There was 80 million in one component in year one for the entire valley, with emphasis being put on South Fresno and on Shafter. The next round of funding, we expect to have about a similar amount. So I'm thinking annually we're looking at millions of dollars in the Shafter area. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think you got it. $8 million first year early action on programs that were existing. Beyond that, some new funding for the new programs.
What's this about programs that are existing? We're here to decide do a new program this year?
You totally can, and that was the next comment I was going to make. We do have programs that we know people like and we want to bring to Shafter because they maybe have not happened in Shafter. An example is the Tune In, Tune Up. That's a very popular program, and we think that there are probably people in the community that moving forward would like to take advantage of it. But then we also want to complement that with brand new programs. So if you know people who have ideas for brand new programs, we love that idea. Some of the things that have been discussed are working with schools to perhaps do some things within their environment. There's been some air filtration conversations at the state level about working with schools. Anything is a possibility at this point. So it really is up to you all. If you have ideas, and you think, well, that's too crazy an idea. No, bring it to, we want to hear them. But at the same time, we also don't want to say, oh, since the tune-in, tune-up program was running before, we're not going to count that, because we know there are people in Shafter that would love to take advantage of that program.
Well, I can guarantee we can come up with a program that will spend $40 million that's brand new in the town of Shafter that will reduce local air pollution and greenhouse gases and be good for the local economy. So I wouldn't plan on spending that money on anything else quite yet until we hear what the new ideas are.
Yeah, great.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Maria.
Yo estoy de acuerdo con Tom en que se utilice lo que hay, ¿verdad?, para estos programas. Pero esto a mí, para mí, se me hace como un show. Porque nomás estamos de programas en programas, que sea, hay dinero. Y si hay dinero, ¿por qué no tuvieron la opción? ¿Por qué se esperaron 28 años para estar en este plan? ¿Saben? A un ser humano o a un familiar no le importa los millones que haya. Nos importan los familiares. Los hijos, los padres que trabajan en el field. Todas estas ideas son bonitas, pero si sabemos cuál es el problema, si se sabe cuál es el problema, ¿para qué darle vuelta a todo esto? Si pudiendo obtener la solución lo más pronto posible. ¿O cuántas muertes o cuántos seres humanos tienen que morir para tomar acción en esto? Yo no sé cuál es el modo de trabajar o el modo de actuar. Porque sí está bien venir, te tienen comida, te tienen todo, pero eso no es el chiste, esa no es la idea. La idea es llegar al punto, a la solución. Sabemos que el petróleo, que los pesticidas son los que están haciendo daño. Si hay troques, el diésel, los carros con el smog, sabemos eso. Pero el 99% de la contaminación son los pesticidas y el petróleo. Entonces, ¿para qué darle tanta vuelta a ideas? A papeles, papeles y papeles. Si no se toma una solución. Pero ya. No esperar otros meses a que nos den más dinero, a que no. Sabemos que un funeral te cuesta más de $19,000. Y nos duele pagar por una persona que se muere. Pero más nos duele que la gente se está muriendo alrededor de nosotros. Y no hay solución. Entonces, para mí, yo no sé los demás que piensen, para mí mejor actuar ya. Ya sabemos cuáles son los pesticidas que dan cáncer, ya sabemos qué es esto, qué es lo otro, entonces ¿para qué darle tanta vuelta? ¿Para qué esperar otro año a que nos den más estadísticas de contaminación? Si ya la sabemos, ustedes lo saben. ¿Ustedes lo saben? Lo siento.
No, thank you so much for your comments.
I'm sorry, pero no, para mí.
Thank you, Maria. Gustavo. That's it. Anyone else on the committee that wants to address the SERP? Okay, Jessica, do you have any other final thoughts? Don't go away.
No, I'm here for any questions or comments from the public. I wanted to address Marla, really quick. So you know, we're going to have a plan adopted by our governing board in October. So I think I know it's been frustrating and it's been a slow process kind of to date getting everybody organized and the steering committee process going. But I think the next meeting we're going to have some really productive, hopefully, conversations about some potential strategies. And moving forward, the SERP development process is going to be kind of rapid steps to the development of a plan, which is really the first opportunity. You know, all of our pollution reduction measures to date have been regional, and this is the first opportunity we have to implement a community-specific program. So it's the first time, you know, your voices have the chance to be heard about these specific impacts. So stick with us. I know it's frustrating, but I think we have some potential to make a difference in Shafter. So thank you so much for everyone for being here.
Yeah, I got a question.
Yeah, hang on. So what we want to just conclude the committee and the agenda portion, but we want some public input. We're going to work backwards here since Jessica just presented. So, and then we'll work to, if there are any questions with regards to Randy, anybody. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, John Haley. My question is, on the data that the APCD and the ARB have already, what are the larger sources of pollution? Is it the cars and the trucks and the mobile sources, or is it the stationary sources like oil and gas, et cetera?
Brian, Randy, why don't you guys go ahead?
Yeah, so based on what we know and the analysis that we did for the original boundary, the area and mobile sources were much higher than the stationary sources. But like I mentioned, the analysis for the entire area, including the 7 mile radius, is still in the works, and that will be, you know, presented in the next month's meeting.
Anyone else? Cody.
This is for Alejandra. At one of the earlier meetings, the community got together and identified locations on maps. Are those those areas that the citizens identified, are those being included in your drill down?
You mean for the pilot study or for just like the sources that are occurring within the community?
The sources that are occurring within the community.
Oh, okay. I believe some of those sources will be included. From my memory, you guys only focused on the boundary that was back then, or was it the whole area? The whole area, okay. So we'll check with Brian and everyone else to see if those sources align. I have not seen. I'm believing some of them will, but not sure about all of them. So I'll check with them.
Good evening. Vince Saragosa again. Great presentation on the... in the future, one of the recommendations I have, especially when you're dealing with... discussing or sharing with the geography. It would be helpful, you talk about community boundaries. Could you more or less display that? There's two boundaries I'm talking about. One is the city of Shafter. The city of Shafter boundary exceeds the 7 mile distance ring or buffer. I don't know if you know that. Secondly, the 7 mile distance ring, to my knowledge, would be a polygon, which is a circle. Within that boundary, you have some interesting data. One is, using 2017 stats, census stats, you have about 20,000 people in the city of Shafter within that boundary. And then also, the rest of the 7 mile distance ring, you have about another 13,000 of unincorporated population. You have a total of 33,000 people within the AB617 Shafter area of interest. That community profile would then make that area the third largest city in Kern County, if it was a city. It's a lot of folks. So consequently, when you're looking at prevailing winds and windroses, you might want to look at other places to do your analysis. You have the centroid, which is downtown Shafter, but that's just for Shafter. If you look at the unincorporated areas, you may want to do some more analysis on windrows, prevailing winds. You know, if you divvy it up into quadrants, I would suggest you look at where is the population. Of course, that'll be discussed in the community profile on the SERP. The other thing is that when it comes to the actual statistics, I was just wondering, the sensitive receptor areas are all over the place, but it's just not the city of Shafter. There are other places, unincorporated areas, and predominantly schools, I believe. Also, residential areas, farm worker housing, et cetera. So that needs to be discussed. So going forward, we're not looking at the city of Shafter per se only. We're looking at the area of interest, which is much larger than what we're discussing, because that's going to determine your sources and your strategies. Just basically, that's it.
Thanks, Vince. Anyone else from the public?
Hi. I know Chevron, Era Energy, Berry Petroleum, and Plains Exploration, just those companies, account for 50% of the PM2.5 stationary source emissions, Chevron being 30% just by itself, which is one of the reasons why they're so concerned with oil and gas emissions. My question is, as of January 1st, 2019, there should have been self-reporting for the methane rule, and I want to know how CARB and the district will work together to incorporate the methane rule reporting into this AB617, because oil and gas facilities have already done reporting, and they have those reports ready to give. So I would like to know how that's going to be incorporated into 617 and if it will be.
Is that a lot?
Okay. Thank you. We'll make note of that. And you're talking about the SNAPS program? For
methane rule.
Okay, cool. We will look into that and then address it at the next meeting.
Great. Anyone else? Okay, it's 7:30. Thank you, committee. Tom brought up an issue, a housekeeping issue, and I want to kind of let the committee know that tonight was the largest committee attendance with 19 of you present. It had dropped off a little in prior months, and so he had an issue with regards to the start time of 5:30. Can we just talk about what time the next meeting will be on May 13th? So do we have a preference? We want to take a vote? Anybody want to chime in here?
What was the previous time?
It was 6 o'clock. We moved it 30 minutes. Just.
Didn't we vote on last time at 5:30? I thought we talked about this at length last time. We don't need to talk about it again. We chose 5:30.
5:30. Okay.
What the thing is, there were people who I think if some people want 6, they should be allowed to have 6 because their community residents are working outside.
I understand. I'm trying to accommodate some other folks.
When we talked about it last year, it was real.
30 minutes isn't railroading it, Tom. I mean, I think 5:30 seems to be okay if you can eat at the table. Yeah, either way's good. I mean, so folks, we need to kind of just get through this 30-minute block. Any thoughts here? 5:30? Are we good? 5:30. All right, 5:30 it is. May 13th is our next meeting. Thank you very much for coming.